Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Yo, it's Eddie Schumard coming to you live from the studios, Heritage Radio Studios at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is another episode of Summer of Food, where we're chasing student leaders across the country, talking to them about their summer internships, summer farm programs. Today on the line, we have Alyssa Viers, who developed her interest in food and agricultural issues as they relate to policy, nutrition, and the environment during her studies at the American University in Washington, D.C., and at the University of Peace in Costa Rica, working towards a master's in global environmental policy. This summer, she spent her time in Philadelphia working for the Food Trust Healthy Corner Store Initiative. And more recently, she just began an internship doing grassroots organizing for Food Day 2013 at the Center for Science and Public Interest. Alyssa, thanks for being on with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's give our listeners a little bit of background, a little bit more about what you're studying currently and where you're studying currently. Are you still at the American University?
Yep. So I just got back to D.C. After a beautiful summer in Philadelphia, and classes start this coming week, so I'm really excited to get back into the swing of things. The master's, like you said, is in global environmental policy, and a lot of people focus on different issues, but most of them fall into food and agriculture, water, climate change, that sort of thing. And my interest lies in food and agriculture. So that's what I'm studying mostly.
So, you know, why food and food policy and food and ag? What was it that, you know, that first got you interested in food as, you know, a career path or an academic pursuit?
Sure. Well, growing up, I always loved nature and the environment. My freshman year roommate and I at James Madison University were kind of the environmental Nazis. We like made sure everybody turned their lights off and didn't waste water when they were brushing their teeth and did recycling correctly, that sort of thing. So after undergrad, I kind of was trying to find ways to pursue my environmental passion in an academic realm, because at JMU, I was doing international affairs, so kind of transferring over to environmental stuff. And that's where I found American University. And during my first semester at American in the GEP program, I took a water class because I thought I was really interested in water, and I still am. But I found that everything that had to do with water that I was fascinated by also had to do with food and agriculture. So during my time at the University for Peace, I was able to participate in our community garden, started by another American University student a few years back, and take a few food and agriculture classes and experience Costa Rican food and agriculture issues on field studies and that sort of thing. And that's what really got me interested in looking more into what's going on in the United States than my own home. And getting really concerned about the issues going on today.
Well, let's kind of tuck into some of those issues, you know, because that's part of this Summer of Food is exploring, you know, student leaders' perceptions on what has sort of been deemed the food movement and what exactly that means. And so I want to get your ideas on what are some of these like really pressing issues for your generation and those coming behind you, and how do those relate to food and agriculture and, you know, really to water at the end of the day?
Mm-hmm. The way I see it, there are several different sectors of food and agriculture, and obviously the one I was most interested in initially was the environment. So that has to do with things like pollution from industrial agriculture and runoff from, pesticides and that sort of thing. And then this summer, more recently, I got interested in the nutrition aspect of it. So, especially in Philadelphia with the Healthy Corner Store Initiative, they kind of started out of concern for childhood obesity, so trying to target kids that were going to the corner store before and after school. So nutrition and health is definitely a huge aspect of it, and I'm learning that even more, continuing that along that vein at Center for Science and the Public Interest. So I think those are the two main kind of broad issues is environment and nutrition that I have come to find through my internship.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the work you did this summer in Philadelphia at the Food Trust's Healthy Corner Store Initiative. Give me and the listeners an idea of what the program goals are shooting for. What's the Food Trust's Healthy Corner Store Initiative all about?
Sure. So the Food Trust broadly is trying to get affordable, nutritious, and healthy food available to all, not only in Philadelphia, but they're also expanding their work. They do things in Camden, New Jersey, Chester, Pennsylvania, sort of the regions surrounding Philadelphia. And they do that through policy change and farmers markets, working in schools, and then corner stores. So during my time at the Healthy Corner Store Initiative, they were trying to, you know, aid store owners in their transition to healthy inventory because it can be really difficult going from, you know, canned goods and things that aren't really perishable to fruits and vegetables that if you don't turn them over very quickly, you're going to have a lot of food waste. Just small things like that that were really a great help to store owners. And, you know, kind of ease their worries about switching to healthy inventory and if it would be profitable, that sort of thing. And in addition to helping the store owners, we were also trying to motivate youth and adults to purchase those healthier items through things like classroom education and direct marketing. And they're working in a little over 600 stores in Philadelphia, and then I think that number gets close to 660 when you add them all up. In the surrounding region, and yeah,
so, good deal. Yeah, sounds like an amazing program. And so I think, you know, you worked kind of directly with both sides of that coin. You worked directly communicating with the corner store owners, as well as sort of speaking to the corner store patrons, which is like these communities that surround these corner stores and that frequent these and use them to a certain extent as their marketplaces or as a supermarket. What were those conversations like, and what were kind of the standouts? Like, what did you take away from having access to both sides of that conversation? Like, what surprised you? Kind of tuck into a little bit of what that experience was like.
Sure. So I think I'll start with the customer side. Most of my interaction with customers was with the youth, which was really great. To have an opportunity to kind of tap into their young mindset and see what the young generation of America really thinks about healthy food. So one of my first encounters was in a school in Camden making healthy smoothies with one of their youth leader programs there who try to encourage their peers to eat healthy and that sort of thing. And it was really exciting to see them excited about the fact that food can be good for you, but also taste good. They're like, wow, what's in this? You know, I'm like, well, it's like yogurt and fruit and like V8 juice. And they're like, no way, like there's no sugar. And so that was really cool just to see kids surprised at how good healthy food can taste because they all think it's like broccoli and they just cringe at the thought of consuming broccoli. So that was a lot of fun. And then on the store owner side, it's really eye-opening to see just how hard it is. And I think if you know, look at a website or read a report, everything seems really optimistic, which is good. But actually being on the ground and talking to these store owners, you realize this is their livelihood, and it's not just something that, like, at the beginning I was like, oh, this is a really great project. Like, why wouldn't anybody want to participate? And you know, what's the harm in participating? You can only go up from here. Like, we're offering so many benefits. What's the downside? And I think I really got my answer when I was talking to these store owners. They're like, oh, well, you know, it's hard to convince people to change their eating habits, or things are still going bad because nobody's buying them, things like that. And although there are definitely successes, overall, I think the program has been a huge success. I think I learned that there are also some changes that need to be made to try to make it more efficient and really convince store owners that, you know, they can do it, and convince consumers that they should be purchasing these items.
Right. It seems like, you know, that the idea of, you know, you going in and being like, why wouldn't anybody want to do this? And that sort of romantic idea of policy working as perfectly as it sounds on paper, and then coming, you know, face to face with sort of like this reality, like, well, I'd love to, you know, stock my shelves with fresh produce, but I also need to make a living and feed my own family as a store owner. And it's been interesting to find this sort of common theme of, you know, breaking down the romantic notions of the food movement. Do you think that, you know, that there's an abundance of sort of people out there, young people in particular, looking at the food movement and looking at sustainability in a romantic vision? And is it important for them to get on the field and you know, see policy in action?
Sure. I mean, even if they're not looking at it in a romantic fashion, I think experience is always good, and that's the best way to learn. I learned more in my 3 months at the Food Trust, and I'm sure I'll learn just as much here at Center for Science and Public Interest than I have in, like, all my schooling and reading books and watching movies and things like that, because you definitely gain information from those outlets, but work experience is just, it's really eye-opening. And so that's that portion of it. But yeah, I think definitely people are looking at it in a romantic fashion and being like, everybody should go to the farmer's market, and like, why don't we all just grow our food organically, and without thinking about, you know, the real reason, why don't we? There are answers to those questions. And
unfortunately, sometimes the answers are more questions.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'd like to kind of get into, like, what some of your long-term plans are in terms of, you know, the rest of your academic career, and then, you know, farther down the line of the professional career. Do you see yourself, you know, working in policy, directing policy, writing legislation, or do you see yourself more on, like, a community level trying to translate that policy into practice, or somewhere else totally different that I didn't mention?
Sure. Well, I graduate next May, hopefully, fingers crossed. I know my parents are hoping too. So I think for the first few years, I would really love to do work with on the local level, working with communities and things like that, because, like I said about my experience with the Food Trust, I think it really takes speaking with these people and being real with them and learning about what their struggles are and challenges and what they're excited about, what works for them, and what really does not work for them. I think that's important in what I want to do after that, which would be working in policy, because I think policymakers sometimes don't have that information, and they're just working on what they think might work. They're writing legislation without having a face to put to that, you know, or a story to put with that legislation. So definitely I want to do community stuff to kind of gain a background and gauge challenges and successes and needs, and then kind of move into policy work.
Fantastic. You mentioned your parents, and they're, you know, I'm sure they're at home crossing their fingers you're going to graduate college. I doubt that's the case. I'm sure they're completely confident it's going to happen. But I want to know, you know, what do your parents think of, you know, your sort of this career path that you've chosen and this focus on food and food policy? And then, you know, follow up, you know, what do your peers think?
Yeah. Well, they're always supportive and loving and, you know, tell me to do what I care about. But there are some times when they're like, well, like, what are you going to do after you graduate? And, like, what kind of job can you get with this? And sometimes it's hard to answer them, and other times I just get on Idealist or Indeed.com, and I type in my keywords, and I'm like, these jobs. so I think their biggest fear is, you know, the job search. But everything I talk about at dinner and like rant about in my free time at home makes sense to them. So that's a start. And my peers, I think it's really interesting not having all of my friends be super environmentally conscious. You know, I have one or two here and there, but for the most part, the things I'm really passionate about don't really cross their minds. So it's hard not to like preach to them every time something, you know, related to this stuff comes up. But they're usually willing to listen, just not as passionate as I am, I guess.
Right. Well, I want to take a quick break, but we want to come back. I want to talk more about, you know, your sort of perception of your peers and their interaction with the food movement, and a little bit more about the Healthy Corner Store Initiative and where you're going with all this. So stay tuned for this Summer of Food episode on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Sweet Talk by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org. Stay tuned for more Summer of Food with Eddie Shumard.
National Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Yo, we're back with Summer of Food. We're talking to Alyssa Viers, who spent some of her summer working for the Food Trust's Healthy Corner Store Initiative in Philadelphia and is currently an intern with the Center for Science and Public Interest, working for Food Day 2013. Alyssa, thanks so much for talking to us. So we were talking about perceptions and what your peers think and sort of, you know, getting on your soapbox when you're hanging out with those who aren't as engaged with these issues. Do you think that, you know, the conversation about food and agriculture and sustainability and all these words that we throw around is becoming more a part of the conversation, or is it still one of those things like, oh, here goes the hippie preaching again?
Right. Well, I think we're finding ways to make people care about it and not just come off as hippies.
Right.
I think health is a very real concern, especially for parents. So definitely in that light, food is becoming more of a legitimate topic, I feel. And, I mean, certainly the environmental food movement is gaining steam, but it's, I think, difficult with, you know, government and certain companies having so much power in decision-making. I don't know. It's hard to make it more than just talk. It's hard to turn it into something that works and something that's good for the environment, stuff like that.
Well, it seems like this is a perfect segue into your new internship at the Center for Science and Public Interest with Food Day, because that seems to be part of their big goal, is to make this conversation a conversation that everybody is having. So, you know, kind of give me an idea of what you're looking forward to and what kind of experiences that you had in Philadelphia you'll bring with you on the Food Day team.
Mm-hmm. Well, my main role for Food Day is grassroots organizing. So I think my summer in Philadelphia was definitely instrumental in kind of getting an idea of the main players in the food and agriculture issues that are going on today. So I'll definitely carry that over and keep those people in mind and different organizations I heard about and found out about and really thought that they were doing some really great work. And let's see, Food Day, I'm looking forward to discovering even more sectors and realms and issues, particularly pertaining to food that I hadn't really thought about. Before going to Philadelphia, the environment was kind of my one scope that I looked at food through, but definitely they have added nutrition and wellness, and I'm just looking forward to learning about some more scopes to look at foods and agriculture through here at Food Day, because they really do reach out to anything and everything that has to do with food and agriculture, and try to get those organizations and players to host an event or just inform the public or have people participate, things like that.
Right. You know, it's interesting you talk about sort of coming from the environmental side of the food movement and your the word you use, the scope that you look at the food through, and then kind of moving into this health and nutrition. And I wonder, do you think that there's, kind of a struggle? Is health and nutrition, going to come up against the idea of sustainable agriculture? Like, are one of those things the opposite? Can they work together?
I think in a lot of ways they complement each other, and that's why I've taken on the nutrition fight along with environmental fight. I'm by no means a dietitian or anything like that. My sister and my mom are both registered nurses, so I'm sure they know way more about the human body and health than I ever will. But in a lot of ways, they relate in really important ways, actually. Like, say, industrial agriculture is, it's kind of disconnecting the way nature thinks that food should be grown. You're taking chickens and cows and things away from the crops and disrupting that cycle of natural fertilization, those types of things. But also, these chickens are being, injected with antibiotics and hormones and things like that, which is bad for human health. So things that are wrong with the food and agriculture system that are human environmental health also, in a different way, affect human health. I think they can actually complement each other, and people from both sides can kind of work together on the issues they care about to try to lobby and advocate for change.
Right. So, I like to ask this question because I believe it. Do you think food can change the world?
I think it can, and I'm trying to think of, just with my background, I'm trying to think of what else would, if food's not going to be the thing that does it.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, and also,
but maybe I'm biased.
No, and I think, of course I'm biased, but I think, I've asked this question to most of the student leaders that I've talked to this summer for Summer of Food, and do you see food as a way for young people or old people alike to engage in some of these larger social, political, cultural, and economic issues that sometimes kind of feel out of reach, like we can't actively engage in them, and food is this way that we can actually, impact policy and connect with these bigger issues?
Definitely, because food is a very personal thing. If you ask a kid what he likes to eat for dinner, he can tell you right away, but if you ask him, who he's going to vote for and why, that's a different story. That's going to take a lot of thinking. So I think, everybody knows how they feel about food, and just finding a way that it relates to these bigger themes is key.
Very good. So, let's talk about this upcoming semester and what classes you're taking and how they're going to relate to sort of your past experience and where you're going to go long term.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, what classes are you taking this semester coming up, and how do they connect to your experience in Philly and at the Center for Science and Public Interest, and then your long-term goals?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm taking an economic development course. I've always been really interested in economics, and money makes the world go round. As cliche as that is, a lot of the things that are going wrong in the food and agriculture system are based on economics, and just the way the money, profits roll out in the end. So I'm excited to learn more about that. And then I'm taking a Politics of Food and Agriculture, which has a kind of community involvement component. You have to go out to an organization and do some, you know, time on the ground there and write a paper and things like that. So I'm excited to learn more about what's going on in Washington, D.C. as far as these issues are concerned. And that's all I'm taking this semester. It's a light load. I got a few out of the way this summer.
There you go.
But, yeah, I think the policy of food and agriculture will really relate to what I want to do after graduation. And, of course, I have one more semester, so who knows what gems I'll get there that I can relate to a career after graduation.
Right. Those classes that you can show your parents and say, look, tangible skills.
Yeah.
So I want you to give sort of some suggestions, personal suggestions for other people, you know, other young people who might first be asking those really simple questions like where did my food come from or how do I have clean water? And your suggestions of how they can engage in these questions and like where should they look? What should they be reading? What should they be watching? Who should they be talking to? What kind of steps should they be making to engage in this food movement?
Well, I think easy ways are definitely the reading and watching. I'm trying to think of some of my favorites. I really liked Vanishing of the Bees. Maybe it was just because I'm a fan of Ellen Page, but I also liked The Message, and I think it was really comprehensive and definitely eye-opening. I didn't know that much about bees and how agriculture is affecting them in very bad ways. I'm currently reading The End of Food by Paul Roberts. That one's pretty good. And I was recently suggested Animal Factory, so that's next on the list to read. And ways to get involved, I would say just start Googling. that's kind of the way I got into it. Just, you know, find organizations that you think are doing meaningful work and who have missions that relate to what you feel strongly about, and get on their listservs and follow them on Twitter, and, you know, they'll tweet or email about articles that they wrote or they read and they recommend, events that they're holding, volunteer opportunities, internships or jobs, things like that. I think once you kind of get that first initial contact, the ball starts rolling and you have so many resources you can't even keep up with them. I think reaching out is the first step, and then it'll all just come your way and sort itself out, and you'll find your niche.
Right. Yeah, I want to just ask, you know, that you mentioned like the Twitters and the Facebook handles. You know, do you see social media and the internet and technology sort of being the new way we engage with this kind of information?
And
the way that maybe like the FDA, USDA communicates. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day, and the USDA in West Virginia live tweeted a calf's birth, pictures, videos, the whole nine. And I thought that's like the USDA is finally catching up, but like that's what you chose to do, like the live birth of a calf. But I'm always sort of interested in finding other people's perceptions about, you know, is that the way to connect with people, or is it more like, do we still need to do the face-to-face, the human, the feet on the ground kind of thing?
Right. Well, I'm not a huge fan of being, like, connected to my iPhone or computer or anything like that, which is probably bad since I'm a grassroots organizer here. And, you know, I think it's vital in some aspects, like things that I'm doing right now, but I think interaction has to go beyond technology. I mean, things like community gardens or, you know, church food drives or things like that. I think building community and it just makes you accountable to other people, and it's a great way to spread information on a very personal level. But definitely Twitter and Facebook and things like that are great for getting information out on a massive scale. But I think if you can do it on a personal level, then I think it's great. It makes it more meaningful to me.
I like that answer. That's exactly the answer that I wanted. It's almost like a teacher, yeah. And see, you can be, you don't have to be a Luddite, and you could still engage in technology, but when it comes down to it, you just need to sit down at the table or break bread together or grow some food together. That's what it takes. Yeah. Alyssa, thank you so much for taking your time to talk to us. I know you're super busy. You went from one internship to another. You're a go-getter. I'd love to keep in touch and see where you go from here. But you guys have been listening to another episode of Summer of Food on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Like all of our 40-plus live shows a week, this one you can find on iTunes, on the website, on Stitcher. And remember, we're a member-based nonprofit, so if you're on the website, go on that donate button and give us what you can. Thanks for listening. This is Eddie Schumard with Summer of Food and HeritageRadioNetwork.org. They're gonna see you.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.